From NPR News, this is Weekends on All Things Considered. Guy Raz is away. I'm Jackie Leiden, and I'm away too. I'm out on the Bark River in southeastern Wisconsin on the most fantastic autumn day. We are surrounded by nothing but woods as far as the eye can see. This is the river that I grew up on. It goes right through Lake Negawicca, my childhood home. It's a beautiful backyard river with lots of history, and I've always wanted to explore it, but this is the first time I ever have.
Jackie, you're so vigorous as a paddler. I think we're going to have to cut the engine on the front a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Milton Bates is our canoe guide, but he's also the author of a new book called Bark River Chronicles, which floats the reader down all 70 miles of this winding southeastern river in detail. We're only doing 6 miles today.
This is a lovely spot here.
We're looking at birches and black walnut trees that have fallen into the river. And beyond the trees and the embankments on either side, it's really marshy. Where are we?
We are at Burnt Village. It's thought to have been the site of a Ho-Chunk village.
The Ho-Chunk are the indigenous tribe here.
You had all these villages for one reason, and it's because it was a very beautiful area to live. My name's William Quackenbush, and I'm the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Ho-Chunk Nation. The Burnt River area was a well-established winter camp.
It's the architecture of those Ho-Chunk winter camps that gave the Bark River its name.
The process would be that the women and the young adults would go there in the spring and cut the tree around the bark and then split that and peel them off. And they'd lay these in shingles on the ground, and they'd put rock across the top of them so they would lay flat. And they'd let them sit there throughout the spring and summer. So when they would come and build their fall and winter chipotle, we call them, or living quarters, all this bark would be dried out, flat shingling, you know, and that's what they would use for these structures.
When white settlers came, they noticed the huts, the chipotle, and named the river. In 1832, they clashed. Milton Bates.
So we're talking about Wisconsin's major Indian war.
A Sauk warrior named Black Hawk swept through Illinois and Wisconsin territory, attacking settlers. So the U.S. government sent in the army to stop him.
General Atkinson was up and down the bank trying to follow Black Hawk and his band.
But the mucky river bottom of the Bark was like quicksand for the horses, and it took several days before General Atkinson's troops could cross the Bark and pursue Black Hawk, who was scalping his way across the countryside.
Looking from a Native American perspective on the Black Hawk War, you know, it was quite one-sided.
Again, Ho-Chunk historian William Quackenbush.
There was ulterior motives as to why Black Hawk came over here, and there was ulterior motives to why this large government wanted to put him back, you know. And that said, we always say, you know, that it's all water under the bridge.
Okay, draw left a little bit. Okay, now we can just kind of work our way in. Probably you should be the first one to get out,
yep.
Jackie, but test it very carefully.
You get up because
my boot. Both of them. I only noticed the one.
Hey, at least it wasn't me, but our producer, Liz Baker, who face-planted into the muck, the boot sucked right off her feet. It gave us a really good idea of why it took General Atkinson so long to get his horses and carriages across the river to pursue Black Hawk. This river was carved during the Ice Age, when glaciers covered Wisconsin. That's why the swell and swale topography of Drumlin Hills and Kettle Lakes. I had to learn all this in geography class. But George Garvin says Ho-Chunks passed down stories from this period.
We have stories about saber-toothed tiger or mastodon, short-faced bear, and tells you we've been here for a long time. I mean, my father's father, my grandpa, he went to school up east, you know, and they saw a circus for the first time. And they ran across an elephant. They knew what it was right away, and it reflected on the days of the mastodon when he walked this earth, and didn't scare them, it didn't surprise them, they just, oh. So that's what he looks like.
More recently, in the 1800s, the bark was used to power the little gristmills all up and down the river, grinding corn and grain into flour and meal.
The mill ground here went all over the country, well, mostly to the east, of course. I'm Margaret, initial E, Zerwick. Don't forget the E. And my address is 500 Mill Road in Delafield, Wisconsin, United States of America.
This is the only private mill left on the Bark, and it happens to be just down the river from my childhood home. I've passed this place countless times, and I never before knew who lived there.
How long have you been in this house?
40 years. It was built in 1863.
Margaret E. Zerwick is almost 93. Her late husband, Kenneth, came back from fighting in France in World War II. He noticed that the only people to have electricity there during wartime were the millers.
And he said, I'm going to have a mill when I get home. And he came back and he bought it. It was so dilapidated, it was falling into the river.
Into the Bark
really,
River itself.
Really bending that way.
An engineer, Kenneth Zerwick, figured out a way to straighten out the four-story building.
So he put in those rods there through the house.
Anchored them to the telephone poles out in the yard.
And every so often he'd come out and pull it up a little bit higher.
Crank it up.
Pretty soon it got out. I think it's almost straight, but not quite.
And he also installed a turbine to generate power from the water, which provided all their household electricity until just a few years ago.
Could you hear the stones?
Oh, absolutely.
Turning?
It was right there.
What did it sound like?
How could I explain it? An old car. A truck. Let's put it that way, a truck. It would have been noisy to somebody, to you probably, but not to me, because those were dollars and cents that I was listening to. And when it stopped, you got out of bed and went down there to see what was going on, see what had stopped the water.
In a day and a half, I'd learned more than I'd ever known about the Bark. And standing up on the fourth floor of the mill house, I had a clear view of the river's graceful curves through the trees. A heron flew straight down to Margaret's mill race. The Bark is just a backyard river now, really, like so many others in America. But get into a canoe, and you'll be as surprised as I at how the water brings that history to life.
Kingfishers sailing off over
all
our heads.
All on cue, even chattering.
For photos of our journey or to learn more about the new book, Bark River Chronicles, please visit our website, npr.org/barkriver. Our program is directed today by Kenya Young and produced by Phil Harrell. The staff includes Lauren Silverman, Brent Bachman, Amy Held, Becky Hersher, Connor Donovan, and Brenda Salinas. Our interns are Acacia Squires and Barbara Sprunt. Special thanks to Liz Baker for her work on the Bark River story. The technical director is Daniel Shukin. Our reference librarian is Key Molesky. Mithoni Maturi is senior editor, and Steve Lichtai, our senior producer. And for Sunday, that's Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. Check out our weekly podcast. Search for Weekends on All Things Considered on iTunes or go to npr.org/weekendatc. I'm Jackie Lydon. Guy Raz returns next weekend. Until then, thanks for listening and have a great week.